Hi, I'm Dr. John Lakey.
And I'm Dr. Payman Danielport. We're board-certified plastic surgeons and hosts of the podcast Forever Young.
Join us every Tuesday as we share the latest products and procedures in the never-ending quest to help our patients look and feel their very best.
The world of cosmetic surgery is constantly improving. Join us on the cutting edge. Forever Young is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Help Me Be Me is self-help for people who hate self-help, hosted by me, Sarah May. What I talk about on this show is my personal opinion, and it's not a substitute for professional help. Take what helps and leave the rest. If you're suffering, please call 911 or your local emergency services.
Yay!
Yay! Oh, so nice to meet you. What an honor.
Oh, thank you. You do such good work.
Oh, really? Thank you. Oh,
well, you've done a little work in you. Beautiful stuff.
Wow. Oh my God. My hairs are all standing up.
Your authenticity and courage. It's really impressive.
Oh my goodness. You're making me glow.
You know, I heard you talk about shame and you're so transparent. I'm just so grateful you're in the world.
Oh my God, you're going to make me cry. Well, I feel the same way about you. I am
not in common.
Very humbled to be able to speak with you today. And I'm a big fan of your work, and I've recommended your books to my clients and my listeners. Mm. Thank you so much for the kind words.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, this is a very casual type of show. I don't do many interviews, and when I do, it's just like, you know, whatever comes up, and we go in all different directions. So it's a very kind of free form, and
you lead the way, and I will be happy to follow.
Okay, amazing. First I want to just introduce you. Do you go by, I've read that you go by Katie, is that right?
Byron Katie. Julie, you just fall into Katie.
Okay, great. The amazing and one and only Byron Katie, author, speaker, world changer. I mean, I know you do trainings as well, so all different types of work. Any other plugs that I should throw in the mix there?
Oh, I do a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of every week, I do a 9 to 10 a.m. Just free for all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. On people can find it on thework.com, I guess.
Oh, great. Okay. I might join that too now that I know about it. Awesome.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing what they'll, yeah, they're just, there's nothing I can say about people that you wouldn't understand, being connected to them and watching their courage.
Mm, I bet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like church, I would imagine.
Yeah. the church from hell to church, all within the church.
Yeah, totally. But like a replacement for it. I feel like, you know, that's kind of what so many people are searching for. In just what can replace that level of, I guess, humble awe, you know, that you get from being able to be in the presence of something greater. And I feel like someone like you could probably offer somebody something like that. So the part of the reason I wanted to talk with you is just because I feel like so much of what my audience struggles with and what I struggle with is really like disengaging from old thought patterns, teaching ourselves out of them, mm-hmm. Overcoming kind of like the kind of emotional baggage that's stuck in your body where yeah. it kind of triggers you to revisit a time and a place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing I think I love about your work in particular is it's so simple, and it's something that people can do to just kind of disengage, like see the thinking that's happening in their brain and disengage from it and have like an actual choice in their life, whether or not they want to succumb to it and follow it or choose something different, which is kind of like the secret to everything in some ways. It's like being able to free yourself from all these old all this old programming. So I'm going to start with like a big, big question. How do we let go of stories that kind of keep us trapped in anger and resent? Because I think a lot of people get stuck there.
Well, self-inquiry is what I'm all about. And it takes a very open mind to look into one's self. But let's say I have a trauma around someone that was really hurting me. And I would go back, and the ego is happy to take us back there because it occurs and occurs and occurs, even when it's not even going on, it's occurring and we're going on with our day. It becomes like an habitual thing that we don't even know is there anymore, but it's living in us and mm-hmm. it's part of our identity. So with what I call the Judge Your Neighbor worksheets, people anchor in a time and place. So in the situation where he was hurting me, it doesn't matter if it was 40 years ago or yesterday. It doesn't matter. It's in me. Mm-hmm. It hurt. And it doesn't have to be a trauma. It can be like the tiniest little thing when our feelings are hurt can shift the rest of our lives, make us so self-aware, and then we offer up these facades we think we can hide behind, and that is just living falsely, and, mm-hmm. and we know it, but it's the best we can do. Mm-hmm. So I invite people to identify, in this case, for example, that situation. I don't want to go there, but to go. You know, we do it involuntarily. It's what the ego offers up. So now let's do it on purpose, to go back where he was doing that harm. He was hurting me in that situation, and it takes courage. And then identify what I was thinking and believing.
Cool. So it's like a time travel.
Oh, yeah. And I have this process is about identifying, or I'll say it this way, honey. It's the cause of suffering is what I was thinking and believing in any given situation. It cannot be the perpetrator. And that does not mean he didn't do what he did and say what he said and the whole nine yards. It doesn't let him off the hook. It's just that what I was thinking and believing in the situation that was the cause of my suffering. Mm-hmm. And that is just how it is. So to identify those, I have a thing I call the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. There are 6 questions on it. And as we stay anchored in that situation, and again, it takes courage. It's like specifically, what is the emotion? Like all of them running, but name one. What emotion, you know, are you most in touch with, and why? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I am furious with him because he hurt me. Mm-hmm. And I know where he hurt me, how he hurt me. That's all running in me. He hurt me.
Right.
I could say more, but I love keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. And if there's more there, I wouldn't hesitate to put it. I just want to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And then the second question there is, in that situation, what did I want? So I've got to sit in that trauma if I'm going to fill in this worksheet. Mm-hmm. What did I want from him? I wanted him to stop hurting me. Mm-hmm. I want him to hear me. Mm-hmm. I want him to apologize for what he did to me. Mm-hmm. And then when I feel empty, I move to the third question. And that is, in that situation, what advice to get what I want, what advice would I offer him? And see, I don't have to guess. I'm running. It was running in that situation. I'm just collecting old business.
Right, right.
Loan. So he should, he shouldn't. He should stop what he's doing. He should hear me. He shouldn't hurt. He shouldn't physically hurt. He shouldn't physically hurt me. And it might be physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And then the next one on the worksheet, there are only six questions to answer. And the next one is, what do I need to be happy in that situation? I need him to stop what he's doing. I need him to apologize and walk away. And maybe not even apologize. I need him to stop what he's doing and walk away. Mm-hmm. I don't even want him to stick around long enough to apologize.
Right.
Because I'm in it. You can hear how I'm living through it.
Right.
So then the next one on the Judge Enable worksheet is what is it that I never want to experience with him or that situation again? And I never want him to touch me again. I never want to be hurt by him again. And so now the worksheet's filled in. And there is what I wanted, what I needed to be happy. There is my expression that I was experiencing then. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I look at each one of those one by one, giving respect to each thought, and I question it. I stay anchored in the situation, and I question the thoughts. Like, I want him to stop. Is it true? Yes. I wanted him to stop. And I might go back to the yes, and God, I wanted him to stop. Is it true? It couldn't possibly be no. Mm-hmm. But something tripped me back there. So I'm going to give it time. What opens in that space when we sit in ourselves and there are no other witnesses, it's just me with me. Mm-hmm. Don't know what you're going to find. But until you find it, it's like the princess and the pea. There's there. And those mattresses are on top of us. And we can't just shove them aside. Because that's where addiction takes on life.
Ooh.
So it is just, you know, how do I react when I believe the thought I want him to stop? Let's see, I've been experiencing that for 40 years. Okay. A person that gets still in that, they can see how they react. The thing they're addicted to shows up. And I use the example of, imagine right now biting into a big, ripe, juicy lemon. And you feel it.
Oh, totally.
So how do I react when I believe the thought? That physical thing happens.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And what do we do with that? Then something shows up automatically. The ego offer up the ice cream, the dope, the cigarette, the whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When the ego has nowhere to go, it offers that up. It's got you. And then let's say it's alcohol. Mm-hmm. You've already had your first drink. It's like the lemon, your mouth, it's already happening. And nothing happened, but an image of that in your mind, times, like if you've been alcoholic for so long, times 1,000 or who knows the number. So that's what you're dealing with. And then it shows you, the ego offers up where to find it, where to find the substance. And you're already there before you're there.
Mm-hmm. So in that process, the six steps, after you've done the six steps, then you're doing the process of inquiry, the four questions. We should probably recap the four questions just in case somebody is not familiar with your work.
The first one is it true? Mm-hmm. And then the second one is, how do you react? What happens when you think the thought that you're questioning? And who would you be without it? So, is it true? How do you react when you think the thought? Mm-hmm. And who would you be without it? And when we look at shame and blame, you know, how do I react when I believe the thought? I blame, I feel shame, I'm there and I don't even know I'm there. Mm-hmm. I'm reliving the whole thing and I'm asleep in a dream. It's just like being asleep at night, having mm-hmm. a nightmare or just a mild dream. It's the same. It's like it's happening in the day. The life is life is imagination. It's imagined. Mm-hmm. We see the past, we see the future, and we very rarely can stay here because ego is showing us other life, another life, past, future.
And so what is the process I've done my six questions. Now I've done the four questions mm-hmm. on that first, whatever it is, the first set of this I want this to happen. Do I eventually get to the point of practicing not being so invested in those sets of feelings, or what is organic?
I want him to stop. Is it true? And I really pondered that one. You know, like if it's true, I can't be a victim. If it's true, I mean, I'm really sitting and I want him to stop. Is it true? Because there are a lot of perks in being a victim. And control over that person. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gets really weird. So I hesitated there. Mm-hmm. And it all depends on so is it true? And I'm landing in, and I really looked at it well. I looked at the yes, I looked at the no. And yes, I want him to stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got in touch with it. Not what I'm thinking and believing now, I'm looking at then. I want him to stop. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do I react when I believe the thought? And then I look at, I meditate in that. How do I react when I think the thought? I want him to stop. And, you know, I just invite people to sit in that and see for themselves. You know, I have my own, and it's different for every situation that I look at. But then the last one, last question, who would I be without the thought? And you know, Buddhists talk about compassion. And that fourth one, it's where I understood from personal experience, compassion. Who would I be without the thought? I want him to stop. I can't stop him, you know, because I am witnessing there now. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. But who would I be without the thought? I want him to stop. I saw his face. And in this situation, I saw fear all over him. And I just said in that, and compassion just happened. And I'm thinking, and this may sound strange, but what position is less painful? And, you know, I'm seeing in that situation mine. And I saw it. I can't change it. I sit in it. I don't try to change it. I don't try to make it. I don't try to unmake it. That fourth question is so powerful. Who would I be without the thought I want him to stop? Or who would I be without my story? Mm-hmm. Plastered all over him at the time. So I get to see without that. So I just drop me, look at him, and wow. So I want him to stop. I want me to stop. There's another turnaround. Okay. What happened, what he did has been years. And when I look at, I want me to stop, then it's on me, not in a bad way, but just to notice when it reoccurs, to remember that compassion and have a little of that for myself. And just notice that it's not happening now and experience the release in that, the gratitude of that. And it's almost as though compassion has taken it over. But we've only looked at one, it has really had a strong effect there. But we've just looked at one thing on that Judge Enable worksheet. Mm-hmm. It's one. So if people sit through everything they wrote, they do those four questions and turn around with everything they wrote, then what happens is we wake up to ourselves, we wake up to reality. It is it's so powerful because it's you with you, and there's no one coming, there's no help, and you're going into that darkness and seeing what's there and taking responsibility for what I was thinking and believing. Mm-hmm. And he has his, but and you know, this is a big deal to understand from experience that it's what I was thinking and believing that was the cause of my suffering, not what he was doing. And that doesn't mean it didn't hurt. And that doesn't mean it didn't affect the rest of my life. But I'm awake. Mm-hmm. Taking care of my part. Mm-hmm. And how many times have I had the thought, I want him to stop, I want her to stop, I want them to stop. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So it wakes me up to the rest of my life just doing that one worksheet. Mm.
It's interesting because it's like, I mean, I have so many things in my brain that are resistant at the same time. Like I have my adult brain that's like, oh, I totally can take this apart logically and see all of the applicable things that make sense to me. And then I have this like resistant part that's like, I think more likely the younger child traumatized part that's like, no, but I can't let go. I can't let go of that story.
It's a big deal because there goes your identity. This mm-hmm. is a little thing we're sitting in. Mm-hmm. So who am I without that? I don't even know. I mean, there goes my victimhood. That's terrifying. Who am I without that?
Yeah.
It's a big ask of oneself.
Right. Well, and I think the key, at least this is my interpretation of what you're saying, is like, it's not about saying it's okay. And it's not about saying this was should happen or should ever happen. It's more about reclaiming
he hurt me, and that's not right. No, it doesn't change. That doesn't change it.
Right. But in that process of like this kind of digging in the dark, in many ways, what I'm noticing is like through that excavation process, you can have a choice of putting down the story.
I only have a story. It's like I question it and it lets go of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't let go of it. It's nothing I have to do. Mm. It lets go of me. Mm.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Cause it's true. I mean, I remember it the most with I had a friend who died when I was in middle school, and she was my best friend and I was the witness to it. And I, in that moment, was like, I will never, ever, I like promised it to myself. I will never, ever let go of her. I'll never, ever heal from this. And that lodged so just tightly in my body that I couldn't, you know, process it. Cause I was like, I had chosen not to. And I think a lot of
matter of integrity, you promised.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go against integrity. Oh, can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does that say about me?
Right. So did I not mean it?
It's a kind in the situation that you're describing. It's like a spell we cast on ourselves.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I think a lot of people do that without consciously deciding it. When something has hurt us enough, I think we unconsciously decide like, I will never, ever get over this because it meant.
Yeah. And it's not even safe to. Mm-hmm. You know, not to remember because that's a safety thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, boy, oh boy, ego. It's it's worth listening to, and you know, I have an expression: all war belongs on paper, and that paper are those six questions on the Judge and Neighbor worksheet. It takes courage to even fill that in.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever find that when you're working with people who are in that stage of growth and change, that it's too much and they can't even fill that out? Like, do people, I'm imagining that it would be a lot to bear. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it can be, but it's a big ask of oneself, but it's nothing anyone has to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is true self-help. And for me, it requires going into the darkness and, you know, into the hole, the bottomless hole, not knowing if I'll ever come out again or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started.
And now you might want to adjust your volume for a brief word from our sponsors. Can you talk a little bit about, because I've read your books and I know the story, but could you just talk about a little bit about how you arrived at this process of excavation and self-inquiry?
It was more than a decade, at least a decade of just self-loathing, agoraphobia. Most of the time was just spent in my bedroom, but the house, for sure, to leave the house was just terrifying. And one day as I lay sleeping on the floor, even though there's my bed in the room, I'm so full of self-loathing, I didn't believe I even deserved to sleep in a bed. And asleep on the floor, and this bug crawls over my foot. And before my ego could jump in and fill the space, I saw how my world was created. And the way that I saw that was there was nothing that's without identification, because there was no thought, no I. When, as that bug crawled over me, I woke up. So in that space, then all of a sudden there was a window and I saw this kind of square thing. And the word window hit it, and then it was a window. So there was the image and the word window. And then light was coming through the window. And then there was light. And then the whole world, the whole room came into existence for me. Walls, ceiling, floor. And I'm still not identified as I. It's just watching the world begin. It was just, and I hold that today. Everything's new and I'm open because I understand, open to the world because I understand the nature of everything, and its nature is good. It is goodness. And this term we use, love. And there's nothing other than that, other than what the ego offers up. And we all have the same privilege of living now, and everything terrible that has ever happened to us is in our head. We call it the past. But that past is always happening now.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in our head. So yes, he did what he did, but it's left in my head. So that makes it mine, not his. So I saw, you know, I'm angry at blank because, or I'm terrified at blank because, get in touch with the emotion. And then the rest of it is, I want, he should, he shouldn't, or they, whoever it is. To be happy, I need, it's just that it's all on those six questions on the Judge and Neighbor worksheet. It's all right there. It's just circular. That's what I learned on the floor. It's circular. And then the first sound out of me was laughter.
Oh, really?
That was really strange to laugh. Oh my goodness. It was, you know, it was something, it was involuntary and I didn't stop it. And it just came up. And so that was the first sound. And it's like, I got the joke. I got the joke. It's like, why didn't someone tell me?
It's kind of similar to Eckhart Tolle's story. It's like a, you know, modern day enlightenment kind of moment,
mm-hmm.
that I feel like so many people crave. Because in many ways, I mean, to be able to like see behind the curtain, or I don't know how to describe it, have the ego be quiet for a minute is almost like, I think recognizing the authorship we all have in our brain. I mean, I talk a lot about on my show about the lens. Like, you can tell yourself a really bad story about today. You can tell yourself a really good story about today, and both are equally true at any given time.
Yeah.
And we very much script.
It's so powerful to know that option's there, because when we're just in one, it obliterates the idea of that other option until someone points it out, like you pointed out. And then we go, oh, gosh, yeah. And we really have to test it too before we can even believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it, in many ways, I think a lot of, because it works both ways, kind of like what you described, is like it works in the present in how you experience every moment that you move through in your life. Also works with the past in what kind of is encoding your energy, mm-hmm. or your voluntary energy as you move through life. And I think, I don't know, I always think about like that process of both backwards and forwards allows you to fully fall in love with reality.
Yeah.
In the truest sense. Cause you're like, it just is. I don't have to do anything. It just is. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to control it. I don't have to change anybody. I don't have to judge other people. It takes so much responsibility off your plate. I'm like, what a relief.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of my audience also, like myself, has an upbringing and a pattern of relating to others that many call codependency. Mm-hmm. And I think codependency is very intertwined with your tools, just because so much of codependency is the pain caused by really expecting other people to do certain things a certain way and being very invested in what they think and feel, mm-hmm. and what they should think and feel. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could speak to a little bit just like how this either inquiry or the six Judge Your Neighbor worksheet could apply to a person who's, let's say, in a relationship where they are painfully reliant on the responses of a partner.
Yeah. To find a situation where that partner, where they're having difficulty with that partner, maybe, you know, they depend on them and the partner is not cooperating, but you know, to find a place where you were angry frightened, upset, and then just identify what you were thinking and believing in that situation and fill in those six questions on the worksheet.
Mm.
It covers it all. It's that's all there is. You know, I'm blank because, and I want, I need, you shouldn't, I don't ever want to. And that's what the ego offers up. That's it.
And after the six questions, because I know you had a very instantaneous response when you woke up and you were like, window, light, like mm-hmm. it hit you, all the truth hit you at once and you couldn't unlearn it. For people who are...
Well, I saw it wasn't true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And until it hit my head, it wasn't true. So a window is not my head. So it was just like the laughter came from, you know, it's like, it's a joke. It was a trick of mind. Life is a trick of mind.
Do you think that, cause I'm like picturing just people I've worked with in the past. And like, I think there is the desire to let go of the story, like the desperate desire, and then the physical response is where they get stuck.
Yeah, it's a part of how I react when I believe the thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it's, how do I react when I believe the thought? He hit me, for example. I imagined he was going to hit me. Let's say he hit me three times. He hit me once. I imagine he's going to hit me again. And so I am hit before he hits me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he raises his hand and I see the past where he hit me. And I see the future where he's going to hit me again. And I'm terrified. Well, am I frightened of him, or is it my ego that is frightening me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even, that makes sense when I say it that way, but it's what I'm thinking and believing, what the ego is offering up of past future that is causing all pain is either remembered or anticipated.
Mm, so true. I mean, like 99.9% of it.
Yeah, so when I have the thought, I want him to stop, then, you know, he didn't do it. Yes, he hit me. Yes, he hit me. But he didn't do the part that is traumatizing me.
Right. Cool. I mean, it's funny because like...
brain are anticipating.
It's so simple, but it's also like your brain, almost like you know it by heart, obviously, because you've done it times a million.
I've done a few worksheets.
Yeah.
A lot of worksheets.
Yeah. But it's funny because you almost have to like, I keep having to teach my brain the equation and like realizing it. I've realized it, I don't know how many times now, but I'm like, oh, wow. It like finally clicks. But you're like reminding your brain to step back and see just the shape on the wall that's the window and not call it window just yet. That's kind of the stage that it's teaching people to, you know?
Yeah, and there was no I, there was no room, there was no anything. And then, you know, life appeared. And you know, I've occasionally called it, you know, my first moment. It's when I was born on the floor at age 43. but I can't say that I am any more alive than the light coming through the window, meaning it's all a state of mind. This is Earth School, where we come in just to pick up the pieces where and so this world is, to me, it's like, it may sound strange to some, but it's heaven. It's a place where there's no downside, no downside. It's a place like Earth School to learn that it's what I'm thinking and believing about the world that is costing me the privilege of living in this world.
So true. Yeah. So true. Yeah. And so I feel like in many ways you're teaching people how to see reality and see the moment they're in.
Well, you know, it's if I say the word apple, then you see an image of an apple and it's probably red. And when people, you know, my mother said, I'm your mother, or my siblings said, mom, and, or ask your mother. And until finally it clicks that that's my mother. And prior to that, I didn't have one. Didn't even know what it was. So it's like this identity came into being, and but of mind, not body. And a body comes with it in Earth School. You know, it's cause and effect. But when we're sleeping at night, we're not dreaming. We don't have a body. There's no we. There's no I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very profound. And I think, well, one thing that happens, I think the one of the descriptions that I forgot which book it was in, but it was in one of your books. The process is very much like getting a car stuck in the mud, like pushing it back and forth in the mud to get it out of a rut. And I do think that made a lot of sense to me, just because it's like in this process of looking at something, first of all, stepping back from it, then looking at it from all sides and turning it around, looking it upside down, it gives you enough space to see that all of that is optional and all of that is written in our minds.
We're just meditating in a moment in time when I was believing like he hurt me. And there were a lot of moments there, but I'm anchoring in that situation where he hit me. And just asking those questions and answering the questions. And once you get that, it's so far reaching, you see and experience a kind of compassion that you cannot make fear happen again. And the next time you think about it, you know, the same situation rises to your mind. You can't make yourself afraid. You can't make yourself, you can't make your, and your stomach doesn't turn over and your chest doesn't hurt. You don't want to, you don't feel like you have to vomit again. You don't, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up from that dream. You can't make that dream a dream.
That's so true. That resonates so much because I feel like that is exactly the process. I mean, I very much preach therapy to my audience just because it worked really well for me. And I think that is very similar to what occurred for me in therapy. Was you're digging through that thing. You're sometimes reliving that thing. You're processing all of the conflicting feelings you have around it. Mm-hmm. You're exposing guilt. You're taking about accountability. And through that process, it's like the wound just kind of gets exposed to air and then it doesn't hurt anymore. It's like, nope, I already got all the gut. I gutted all the sickness out of that thing.
Yeah.
It loses potency.
Yeah.
Wow. And did you, I'm so curious, when you were, so after your moment of enlightenment, I'm sure your kids were like, what's going on? Did you have a mental break? What happened? Was it pretty much like, you kind of knew exactly what to do with this information, or did it happen organically, or how did it evolve into what it is now? I'm just so curious.
Well, just really unrecognizable, unrecognizable. Everything shifted. I mean, just being out of bed and dressing and showering and brushing my teeth. Who is that? But beyond the physical, you know, I picked up a cigarette and it looked crazy to me. And it was like, she's gonna what? And I mean, it was crazy. So, and my choices around food shifted, everything started shifting. And it was really radical because I got such a heavy dose, but it didn't stop me from, it didn't stop the mind from putting this stuff out that I needed to, I called it undoing my world. And I saw it as a kindness and a respect that anything powerful enough to make a world could, it's just respectful to sit in and, you know, is it true? Can I really know that it's true and notice how I reacted and who I'd be without it and to meditate in those four questions. And then how do I react when I believe the thought? I have a lot of, you know, I hurt people. I said things, I did things, and no enlightenment is going to change that, even though I know it is a state of mind that it is not happening now, wasn't enough. Those people that I said what I said and I did what I did that was hurtful, harmful, it showed me in that worksheet, as I said in those, it showed me specifically, just meticulously, what I said, what I did, specifically what to admit to, what to apologize for, and how to make it right. It's just all there. It's all there. And, you know, it had to be because it had to come out of that first experience on the floor. And it's, I just saw how the world was created and how to end it.
So in the six steps, that gave you the opportunity to, in many ways, fall in love with reality, including the reality of what needed to be repaired. Does that?
The six questions on the Judge and Neighbor worksheet showed me my thoughts, what I was thinking and believing in any given situation. So it's a meditative process. It's an exercise in stillness to be there now and collect what you were thinking and believing and write it down. And then the four questions, you go back and I would go back and use those with everything on my Judge and Neighbor worksheet. And then, like, for example, I want him to stop. How do I, you know, turned around? I want me to stop. And so it doesn't come up like something I have to do. It's an exercise in forgiveness. It's exercise in making it right. It is far from something I have to do. It's an exercise in kindness and compassion and self-love. That gives the world a kinder human being in me. Just continues to show me how to live those worksheets, because with that kind of full dose on the floor, I had no idea how to live. And so those turnarounds, you know, they became life to me, how to live. Like, I want him to apologize for what he did. You know, I want me to apologize for what I did. And let's say I said or did something to hurt him, just this tiny, 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 tiny little thing. And his was 1,000-fold, just much more than I could even begin to count. But no, Princess and the Pea again, I've got to take care of this one thing. And that is And it doesn't necessarily have to be with him, but with someone, you know, starting with myself, you know, I did it. And how do I react when I believe the thought? Oh, it gets really egoic. It gets really, the ego just can just own us if we don't have a little self-support and way out. Because, you know, how do we take care of it otherwise? Through addiction, addiction behaviors, false identities.
I think a lot of people take on false identities because if you hold on to it and you don't look at it, you're kind of telling yourself it's true. And then you script out your identity and things compound, you know,
play out. I'm not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is just untrue. So now we're living something that's not true. That's why I think sharing is so important, you know, having someone, you know, first with yourself, then having someone you can share with, which is what you spoke to when you mentioned therapy, you know, someone that understands, or the 12-step programs and people's churches and people they trust, and there's, you know, a good friend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, you're almost reminding people of their own, you know, God-given rights, birth-given rights to just exist without the stories or without the conditioning, without the stories you told yourself, without the stories somebody else told you.
Well, and the stories continue to happen. It's just that there's no attachment to them.
Mm-hmm. You know?
They don't hold the power. You've questioned them and they're not what you thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
That person isn't who you thought them, you believe them to be. They're not just that.
Mm-hmm.
Much more. People are everything. They're kind, they're not, they're they're troubled, they're happy. I mean, you know, there's no one that isn't like us.
Mm-hmm. One thing that came to mind, just picturing when you do get to this state of non-judgment, at least this is something I've found, is that hard change gets a lot easier as well. Including stuff that, like, maybe we've been denying that we don't want, we think we don't want, you know, like accepting this person doesn't treat me well. I don't want to be with this person. And when we resist that, or when we are in our mind arguing with reality and saying, like, they should be doing this, they should be doing, like, when we get into that controlling state, when we can go through the process of inquiry or just letting go of the judgment, I think what becomes really wonderful is a lot of healthy change opens up, because all of a sudden you arrive at just what is, and it's not so bad. It just, things have to be done. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It allows you to correct maybe things that aren't working in your life.
Yeah.
Which I think is so profound.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about when it comes to feelings of grief. Do you feel that this work can still work for people, or
it's grief is you're not here for me. One of my children, let's say one of my children died. That's a big metaphor. I don't, you know, but I'll use it. Say one of my children die. And what is my grief about? You know, they're not going to be here for me. I won't see them again. Well, that's not true. I see them in my mind's eye. And just like I have three children, I have grandchildren, and I see them in my mind's eye. You know, they, and I'm assuming they're alive. But let's say one of them died, and I don't have the news yet. Where's my grief? But you know, something happens to one of them. Let's say death, and they're not going to be here to say hi, Mom. They're not going to be here to say I love you, Mom. They're not going to call me on the phone and say, Mom, I need you to help me. You know, all the things that we love. So you know, grief is, it's a big deal and a real thing. It's just not about that person that died. You know, is and isn't. You know, the thing is, you know, about that person that died is I love that person, the end, that's it. I love that person. And that can never die.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's why the work we're talking about is so important, whatever way we find, and whatever our inner work is. It's so important because that's, yeah, Earth School.
Earth School. As you have gone through your career, has it changed for you since the beginning, or has it stayed pretty much the same? Just practicing this with people across the world.
Could you ask it differently?
Have you found that how you feel practicing this has deepened or has altered in the years that you've done it?
You know, I can't really say that what has radically shifted is my ability to articulate my experience my experience. And but you know, for an agoraphobic, you know, as my life changed, for an agoraphobic to all of a sudden be flying all over the world by invitation and working with thousands and thousands of people, and out of a fearless state of mind and tirelessly, it seems, is that's quite a shift from someone that couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you were born 43, obviously. Yeah, I mean, one thing that is, or I feel like has slowly started to happen for me is my brain is just more comfortable thinking in this language. And then I'm also, I feel much more immediate or connected with people. Whereas previously, I feel like I was too trapped in the judgment, but that's probably just, you know,
a distance.
Yeah, exactly. Self-protective thing.
That distance is when I lost that on the floor. Oh boy, the world is in me.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I would love to remind people your website is thework.com, is that correct?
ByronKatie.com or thework.com. Yeah, and I have a 9-day school for the work. I didn't mention that to you. 9-day school for the work coming up in March. And it is so radical.
Amazing. And the worksheets, are those available on your website as well?
Always free on thework.com. And there's a 99-cent app too, work app, and it's so good. It's so good. It's not like you know, it's an old one, but it just does the job so well. And but yeah, on thework.com. And then I have a helpline that there are facilitators there that they don't charge money, and they just support people just to kind of, I call it just kind of learn how to ride the bicycle. You know, they help them fill in the worksheet and get them familiar with the four questions and turnarounds. And
oh wow, amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't imagine how many people in the world you've helped, but I'm sure it's exponentially growing.
Well, one to the other to the other. It's a beautiful thing. Like you found something so valuable. You just have to share it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful to have spoken with you, and you're a beautiful person, and I've been very grateful for your work.
Well, thank you for your transparency and authenticity and the way that you give. It really is extraordinary, and I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're in this world, honey.
Well, I will be glowing for the rest of the week, thanks to you. And I will put links to all of your, all the things you mentioned in the show notes of the episode. And thank you so very much, Byron Katie.
Honey, I'm going to call you friend. This has just been just so sweet being with you.
Oh, thank you, friend. All right. Well, have a great rest every week.
I'll call you beloved.
Oh, wow. I love it. All right. Goodbye.